My guest for our first half of our 9 to 10 hour this morning, we had on a couple days ago. He's a retired FBI agent, 30 years with the agency. He's written some books, and we had so much fun talking to him for 5 minutes, we asked him back for a half an hour, and he agreed. His name is Jack Owens. Jack, good morning.
Oh, thank you, Jack. I'm really happy to be back. I'm flattered. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I understand that you, first of all, were a lawyer before you became an agent, and then you went through the training at Quantico, and after that, spent, 29 years in Alabama?
Yes, I had a year in Denver, 1969, and 29 years in Alabama in Birmingham. I kept my head down, Jack. I loved where I was.
Yeah.
I didn't want to move.
Well, here's the question. We're going to talk about several different things. I want to talk about JFK because you even wrote a book on it, and we're involved in that. But before we get there, let's talk about Florida and the school shooting and what went wrong in terms of the Bureau, in your opinion. And also that that deputy that opted to go not to go in the school. Just give me your whole perspective of that event.
The adults, Jack, in law enforcement, we let these kids down. Starting with the FBI, we made the mistake of not acting quickly and with authority and with emphasis in getting the information, which showed a possible life-threatening situation, not getting that information to the Miami field office. Our national hotline is a good idea. Americans respond to it, and we're grateful. Then they give us information, and we don't act on it. We can't do that again. That has to stop.
Any idea? Excuse me, I'm grabbing something from across the room here. Excuse me. What... it's been said that protocol wasn't followed. Any idea why it wasn't followed?
I don't understand why. I know there's a high volume on that tip line, but that's not an excuse. We set it up. We invited the public, and they responded. The director of the FBI, Ray, he apologized to the American people, said we will do better, the Bureau will do better. And my 30 years experience in the Bureau, when there's a push on what we call a Bureau deadline, it happens quickly. There's no dragging of feet, and there better not be. Mm-hmm. I don't think there will be in this case.
I'm going to leave it at that, and if you folks out there, we're going to open our phone lines here in a few moments. If you guys out there want to continue this discussion, you are more than welcome to. I wanted to continue here and talk about your amazing career. When you joined the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover was the director. Now, tell me about any stories or information that you have about Mr. Hoover.
Well, the FBI Academy was set up so that we spent a lot of time, new agents in training, right down the hall from Director Hoover. We ran, my class of 51 new agents ran afoul of him one day when he saw many of us, including me, brown bagging to lunch. We were carrying our lunch. The director exploded, sent word to us that agents didn't brown bag. We ate in restaurants, and we should conduct ourselves as we would be professional, a professional businessman. I took my little brown bag lunch, which was under my desk in our new agents class. I scooted it over underneath the desk of my neighbor. I set him up. Luckily, nothing happened to our class, but you had to be careful around Director Hoover. He was an authoritarian. He ran a tight ship. The Bureau's set up to operate like the Marine Corps. And one of the interesting things that Hoover brought to the FBI was a Library of Congress decibel system that we used to keep track of our cases and the case numbers. And the FBI has a wide variety of jurisdiction, more than other federal law enforcement combined.
Now, we've heard over the years all kinds of weird accusations about the director, that he liked to wear women's clothes and all that stuff. Any idea whether any of that's true?
Well, I have friends who work directly for him, and they get a big chuckle out of that. If you think about the allegation that he was wearing women's clothes and that the mob in New York photographed him
yeah.
in women's clothes,
yeah.
did you ever see any of those photos, Jack? I never did.
No, I never
I just
did.
Don't think it's true.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. Now, let's move to Kennedy.
Yes.
We used to have a guest on the show every November who was the associate press secretary for President Kennedy.
Yes.
And his name was Malcolm Kilduff.
Yes, I know about him.
Yeah, and he was the most fascinating person I've ever interviewed because I am so fascinated by the whole Kennedy assassination thing. He was two cars behind Kennedy's in the press car.
Yes.
He was the one who had to announce to Lyndon Johnson he was president of the United States. He's the one that had to go on TV and announce it to the world.
That was a tough thing.
His theory was different than anybody else's theory I've ever heard. But now you've written a book on the subject. First
yes.
of all, how, Jack, were you involved in this investigation?
I was involved in a personal sense in 1963. I was a sophomore in college. I was not in the FBI yet. But I love Jack Kennedy. He inspired me. His elegance, his eloquence, his wit, a special temperament, a special grace, brought wonderful things, wonderful capabilities to the White House. I was devastated when he was shot to pieces in Dallas. I never got over it. I still haven't. And when I became an agent, I saw all the evidence accumulated by the FBI agents during the Warren Commission days. That case is still open, Jack. I have seen all the evidence. There is no hard evidence of a conspiracy, but that's not what my novel is about the killing of JFK. I have a conspiracy by Americans to kill their own, to kill their president, and the Soviet Union knew about it and let it happen. They were perceptive in the Kremlin. They thought Lyndon Johnson was a better deal for them. They just let it happen. They thought rightly that Johnson might suck American treasure and blood into Vietnam, the jungles of Southeast Asia. They let it happen. They looked at us as an odd race killing Jack Kennedy.
Now, how do you mean they let it happen?
They had a mole, a typical word for a high-level spy,
yeah,
inside of naval intelligence in the Pentagon. And that mole learned of the conspiracy to kill Jack Kennedy in Dallas. And the mole reported back to his bosses, his handlers in the Kremlin. And so the Russians, the Soviets, the KGB, the GRU, they had to make a decision. What are we going to do with this? They decided to let it happen.
I see.
And monitor it from afar.
That's chilling. Let's take a call. Hang on. This is Dan. Good morning, Dan. You're on with Jack.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning, guys. On this Kennedy thing, yeah, I'm convinced myself from doing a lot of research and reading that there was a conspiracy. It wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald acting alone. I know
yes.
When Bobby Kennedy was first told that his brother had been killed, he immediately thought the anti-Castro Cuban groups had
yes.
done it for retaliation for the Bay of Pigs. I think
Good
some
point.
Of the more recent evidence indicates that maybe the Johnson people, the Texas oil people, were behind it all, maybe a combination of the two. Do you have any feelings as to who you think might have been behind it?
I know I'm biased. I have... After seeing the evidence for decades, everything the Bureau did, all the interviews, all the investigation, I do believe that Oswald acted alone. However, I don't judge men and women, our citizens, when they believe there was a conspiracy. There were a lot of suspects, a lot, Dan, you know, the Cubans, the Mafia, the industrial military complex in America. I also have heard that Lyndon Johnson was involved. People have told me that's what they suspect. The Secret Service, which is an odd thing to choose as a conspirator because the service loved Jack Kennedy.
Did they?
The FBI has been under suspicion, the CIA, the list goes on and on.
We'll never know for sure, will we?
We may not. You know, if,
thank you for your call.
Three people can keep us if two of them are dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing's come forward.
In case you just joined us, Jack Owens is my guest, 30-year veteran of the FBI. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. Email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. And if you want to text us, 253-5959. We got a text, Jack. I think, if I'm not mistaken, yes, you did work the Wayne Williams case in Atlanta. Is that correct?
I did. The two-year serial killer child murders case. It was horrible. It was like the shooting in Florida. Two dozen kids killed by this monster named Wayne Williams. He's still incarcerated in Georgia, by the way. He did not get the death penalty because we only had circumstantial evidence, but I was there the night we caught him. My timing was good. We got him.
I want to relay the question that our caller had, and it is, do you think that Mr. Williams is guilty of all the murders in Atlanta in the 80s?
I'm not sure. We in law enforcement think perhaps two dozen. Some murders would have happened during the course of just all of us living together in cities and bad people being there. But those kids died horribly. They were just teenagers. They lost their lives at the hand of Wayne Williams. It was circumstantial evidence, Jack, that nailed him. We got him. Hairs and fibers from his body and from the victim's body found at his house and in his car. The profile on him was amazing. Terrific work by local and federal law enforcement. The profile was a perfect match for Wayne Williams.
But I guess we'll never know for sure if he did all the killings in Atlanta.
We won't, but he was tried for two killings, and he was absolutely guilty of those two. But there was possibility of two dozen or more that he killed, and of course he never confessed. He didn't get the death penalty in Georgia because they don't have death penalty on circumstantial evidence. You've got to have more than that, usually a confession.
Here's another text says, please ask your guest if the resistance to the Nunes report on FISA abuse by the DOJ and the new FBI director, Mr. Wray, indicate those two agencies are thoroughly corrupt. I'm very sure both need indictments and a house cleaning. Do you have an opinion on that?
I do. Procedures were followed by the FBI and the Department of Justice on using the FISA court to conduct surveillances. The procedures are very tight and monitored to get any kind of warrant out of the FISA court. The FBI is not corrupt, neither is the Department of Justice. We, the Bureau, followed procedures set up by law and by what's demanded of FBI agents. I have full faith in the way the Bureau acted there and the Department of Justice.
Here's another question. The question, I was unfamiliar with this part of it. Listener says, please ask your guest if he can talk about the FBI's Countel Pro against the Black Panthers counterintelligence program.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yes.
That was a very heavily applied effort to get criminal information, indictments, prosecutions against the Black Panthers, who began in Oakland. Interesting name, considering the current movie. But
really?
That process used by the Bureau was heavily criticized by civil libertarians as too heavy-handed and violating individual rights in this country. There were instances where the FBI struck out with heavy hands to put Black Panthers in prison and should have taken their feet. We should have taken our feet off the pedal at times. And for the FBI has since apologized. Subsequent directors have apologized when we overstepped.
All right, before we have to leave, we only have about 3 minutes left, and I wanted to give a proper time to talk about your books. There are three of them. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, Jack. My memoir of three decades in the Bureau, one of the most wonderful decades. The memoir is called Don't Shoot, We're Republicans.
That's a great title.
FBI roadblock, direct quote, Jack. In 1983, I filed it away. We rushed the wrong car. Elderly ladies at night were in the car, and we pointed shotguns at them, not knowing who they were. And one of them said, "Don't shoot. We're Republicans."
I love the title. That's great. Okay, and
thank you.
Two others. Tell us about.
Yes. The other is my novel about the assassination of JFK called Watchmen, JFK's Last Ride. And that term Watchmen, Jack, is from the 127th Psalm, mm-hmm. which Kennedy was going to quote in a speech never delivered in Dallas. And it goes like this: "Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman awakens in vain." Mm. Only JFK would quote a psalm in a luncheon speech. He loved the English language, and like Churchill, he sent it into battle. Mm-hmm. And my last book is called POCK, P-O-C-K. It's about a serial killer. It's one of a trilogy. The second is due out within the next couple of months. And this POCK character is ugly, with a cratered face, a club foot, a shorter right leg. He's heavily disabled, and yet he effectively kills people with very few witnesses.
Mm. Well, that sounds intriguing.
Thank you.
And he also talks about Jesus.
He does. He loves words from the 40s and the 1890s. He loves the English language. He's an intellectual. He loves Bulgarian opera. He talks to Jesus and to flowers, and flowers and Jesus talk back to him. He quotes the gospel after every killing. He got religion in an Alabama prison, made good use of his time finding the Lord, as he puts it. And he's going to be romping around Alabama, Tuscaloosa particularly, and Birmingham in three books. I invite readers to keep up with him.
That's great. Now, how do we get those books?
You can go to my website, Jack Owens Books. Or even a quicker fix, go to Amazon. You can go into any bookstore in America. If my books aren't on the shelf, you can order them in 2 to 3 days.
All right, Jack, we're going to bug the crap out of you and call you back before too long and ask you to do this entire program with us. May we do that?
Thank you. Yes, I'm flattered, Jack. Please invite me. I would love to come on your show again.
Thank you so much.